Well, they just sort of stopped. The witch hunts, I mean. Salem may have been the peak of the madness when it came to hunting American witches, but it was not the end. More trouble followed. More elderly, eccentric, or just plain mean people in small communities throughout the colonies were accused of witchcraft. Some of them were placed on trial, a few were convicted, a few were hanged, and then it all just seemed to fade away, and the 17th century became the 18th in the American colonies. Matters more pressing took everyone's attention. War, droughts, religious conflicts, and revivals among them. There had also been seeds of doubt planted about the fairness of the witch trials. Many questioned the extraordinary ways they'd been conducted, the evidence that had been allowed, and the torture that had been used to extract confessions. Most admitted that they themselves would confess to just about anything, if some of them was dumping them in a lake to see if they'd float. But just because the witch trials ended, it didn't mean the suspicion about some members of the community came to a halt. And it also didn't mean that witchcraft wasn't practiced anymore, because folk magic and conjuring had never gone away. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, and the dark side of American history. And welcome to our newest season, Woods and Fields, Dark and Wicked, which is hosted and produced by Cody Beck and written and performed by Troy Taylor. That's me. We have a long road ahead of us this season, traveling American forests, farms, and fields with tales of witchcraft and hexes, cults and curses, calamities and cannibalism, massacres and mysterious disappearances, and more magic, mayhem, sinners, and spirits than we've ever offered before. And this time, we'll take a jump ahead in history and see how the fear of witchcraft in America never really went away, and how the people of West Virginia discovered witch trouble in Booger Hole. No matter what may have been happening with the religious and civil authorities at the time, for the everyday folk, belief in witchcraft and its powers persisted. Such a belief rarely linked magic with the devil, though. Instead, people just accepted that certain men and women had powers and secret knowledge and were expected to be respected or feared, or more accurately, a little of both. These people were known as cunning men or wise women. They had existed before the times of the witch trials and had somehow survived during those persecutions. They were the practitioners of folk magic and healing that the Puritans had both hated and feared, and they continued to practice their craft in small towns and on farms throughout America. But don't misunderstand. Some of the cunning men and women had been tried and executed as witches, but they were, more often than not, able to avoid persecution thanks to the respect they held in communities where they provided valuable services. It's their survival that manages to provide the continuity between the modern day and the ancient practices of witchcraft tradition. But for many people, those who practiced folk magic were not necessarily considered witches. Even though they were believed to have the same or similar occult powers as witches, it was thought by many that a witch used his or her powers for evil purposes, in league with the devil. In fact, one of the primary roles of those who engaged in folk magic was to help people who had been cursed by witches. However, that is not to say that some people who are regarded as being among the cunning folk and technically practiced good magic could not be regarded as evil by a minority. You gotta remember, when it comes to witchcraft, perception is everything. It should also be noted that despite surviving stories at the time, there were also more men than women among the cunning folk. The men generally practiced their craft as a second job in addition to their main employment, while for women, it was their only source of income. When it came to cunning or wise folk, men were often known as wizards and conjurers. Some even took the title doctor to make themselves seem more respectable. Many were also known as witch doctors, power doctors, and conjure folk. One of the main functions of the cunning folk was that of healer and fortune teller, as well as helping lift curses. Their advice was sought on matters of love, the crops and the harvest, poor health, finding lost treasure, and more. They might also provide herbal remedies, potions to remove warts, and good luck charms. The tools of a wise man or woman included crystals for scrying, divining rods for finding water, wands, knives, and books. Lots of books. When books were not exactly common at the time. They had books on spells and rituals and on tarot cards, astrology, and fortune telling too. The written word was thought to contain power, and magical books took on a supernatural power of their own, something we'll hear more about in the next episode. Well as owning books, the cunning folk created their own books on a variety of subjects, including astrology, herbal medicine, and magical spells. Many also used books to record their practice, their ideas, and any useful information they gleaned out in the wild. But the most powerful book to most folk magic practitioners, especially those in the South and Appalachia, was the Bible. It was often used as a spell book of sorts. In Appalachia, the family Bible was used to record births, deaths, marriages, and other events. Important dates filled the blank pages inside, as would makeshift family trees, pictures, certificates, newspaper clippings, and locks of baby hair. This put the conjurer in touch with his or her ancestors, which was essential in the workings of folk magic. But the Bible was also used to provide power when its words were spoken or written, like the so-called blood verse, which is Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 6, and it goes, "And when I passed by thee and saw thee polluted in thine own blood, I said unto thee, when thou wast in thy blood, live. Yea, I said unto thee, when thou wast in thy blood, live." This was a verse that was used to stop bleeding in both man and beast. A verse from John was often used when baking bread. "This is the bread that comes down from heaven, so that one may eat of it and not die." Or there was a verse from Joel that was recited while cooking. "Yea, the Lord will answer and say unto his people, behold, I send you corn, wine, and oil, and ye shall be satisfied therewith." They might also rub oil on stiff joints when reciting Proverbs chapter 16, verse 24. "Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones." Well, based on the Bible or not, though, folk magic could be used to stop pain and cause it too. It didn't always go by the biblical idea of being kind to your neighbor. It was more aligned with the concept of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Spells for protection and curses used everything from rainwater to moonshine, tobacco juice, graveyard dirt, red clay, silver, roots, herbs, bones, candles, bottles, knots, poppet dolls, and all manner of written charms and spells. Folk magic may have been carried to America by immigrants, but when it arrived here, it became a purely American type of witchcraft. And that's likely why it's stuck around for as long as it has, and how it's managed to get some people into trouble. In 1900, Booger Hole was a remote settlement in the wooded hills of Clay County, West Virginia. It was a secluded, isolated spot, and its name advertised it as a spooky and haunted place. Now, unless you're a sixth grader, a booger is a menacing supernatural being, like a giant or a monster, that's seen at night in wild places. Booger Hole was known for a ghostly woman who wandered the woods and fields, dressed all in white with hair as black as a raven's wing. She was known for wailing and crying in the darkness, and no man was ever known to look upon her face. So you can stop snickering. It's that kind of booger or boogeyman, not the other kind of booger that comes from another kind of hole. Anyway, back to the story. The population had deep Irish and Scottish roots and little contact with the outside world. It had a reputation as a rough and lawless place with a long history of poverty, poor education, and intermarriage. Their stories were filled with tales of haunts and spooks, as well as the very real presence of witches and witchcraft, even during what most would consider the modern world of the early 20th century. To the hill folk of the region, bad witches enjoyed stealing milk and preventing butter from churning. They also took the shape of animals and birds and caused illness and death among members of the community. Locals protected themselves by nailing crosses of hazelwood on their homes and barns to ward off the effects of bad witches. They also hired witch doctors to break the spells of the evil witches, and they used many techniques, but especially popular was the making of a beeswax image or poppet of the suspected witch, covering in a cloth worn by the suspect and then burning or driving nails into it. Or at least that's what someone did with the poppet of Annie Boggs. Annie Boggs was a member of a large extended family that had already been in Booger Hole for several generations. The Boggs, along with the Moores, the Cottrell, Lyons, and McCumber families, had been scratching out a living from farming, hunting, and timber for at least a century. Some had improved themselves to respectable status, while others remained dirt poor. Schooling was deemed unnecessary, and illiteracy was almost a badge of honor. But it would be the death of Annie Boggs that would curse those families for decades to come. Annie Boggs returned to Booger Hole to settle in 1899. She was a widow and brought with her two granddaughters, Prudy, age 18, and Mabel, age 2. Annie was given a place to live by a relative, Squire Boggs, one of the more successful men in the area. A few years earlier, he had built a schoolhouse to educate local children, but few of the parents were interested. By the late 1890s, it was abandoned, so Annie and her granddaughters moved in. They put thick blankets over the windows and started a garden of corn, vegetables, and herbs. With help from Squire Boggs, they made it through their first winter and settled into the community. Unfortunately, Annie made enemies right away. Her plan had been to offer her services as a healer and a conjurer, but her personality made that difficult. She was independent, sharp-tongued, and hard to get along with. Always remember, when it comes to witchcraft, perception is everything. In the spring, rumors circulated that Mother Boggs was a witch. The rumors seemed to have started among members of the Cottrell family, who had heard from relatives in Roane County that Annie had been kicked out of there because of witchcraft. Local misfortunes began to be blamed on Annie. Among the most vocal of her accusers was Marshall Cottrell, who accused her of riding him at night like a horse. In other words, her spirit was forcing him out of bed and making him run up and down the surrounding hills. Well, as things got more heated, there was talk of lynching Annie, but cooler heads prevailed, at first anyway, and a conjurer was hired to try and block Annie's spells against members of the community. A poppet was made and a pin was driven into the wax figure's back. And then on a cold winter's night in 1900, someone pulled aside one of the blankets that covered the window at the schoolhouse, poked a rifle through, and shot Annie Boggs in the back. A murder investigation was started by Deputy U.S. Marshal Daniel Cunningham, one of the most renowned lawmen in the state. He found the tracks of two people outside Annie's window, and his analysis of the bullet that killed Annie revealed the kind of rifle used to kill her. It turned out that Marshal Cottrell had borrowed just such a rifle from a neighbor a few days before. Well, that was enough to get Cottrell and his nephew, a young man who had been courting Annie's granddaughter Prudy, arrested on suspicion of murder. They were taken to the Clay County Courthouse for a hearing, and the courtroom was packed with Cottrell supporters from Booger Hole. They were ordered to leave the guns and rifles they'd brought with them outside under guard because the authorities feared a disturbance. Cottrell and his nephew pleaded not guilty to the murder, but couldn't be swayed from the idea that Annie was a witch. The courtroom was filled with outspoken relatives who agreed. Cottrell swore that Annie had ridden him night after night, making him run up Blue Knob, and even lifting him off the ground and making him fly. Cottrell claimed that he flew, quote, through the wind and rain and cold, not knowing what minute lightning would hit us. At this part in his testimony, a woman in the crowd called out, "You can't be stricken by lightning when you're being witch-ridden. Lightning don't hit witch horses." Then another woman yelled, "I wouldn't tell anything about it. It's mighty unwholesome to be talking so much about the witch folk, even if she's dead." Now, I'm guessing there were a lot of courtroom rules in West Virginia in 1900. Anyway, Cottrell kept talking anyway. describing how Annie had ridden him and how he'd woken up every morning with scratches from briars on his feet and burrs stuck in his clothing. He said he'd been ridden 20 or 30 times, and his nephew, well, he claimed the same thing. Under questioning, Cottrell said he had not tried to kill Annie Boggs. "Don't you know she'd have killed me if I had?" he asked the judge. Despite his claims of innocence, the hostility that Cottrell expressed toward Annie was an obvious motive for murder. The judge had no choice but to indict him and have him brought to trial, but in the end, the trial never happened. With no actual proof against Cottrell, the case against him was dropped. So the killer of Annie Boggs was never legally punished for what he did, but, well, the story's not quite over yet. In February 1905, a neighbor of Annie Boggs was arrested after confessing to Annie's murder. He said he'd done it with the help of two female accomplices, his sister and her friend. Fred Moore had been 15 at the time and had been living with his sister Rosa and her husband John Lyons. According to Fred, he'd killed Annie because she'd threatened to reveal her knowledge of another murder in the community, which she'd learned because she was a witch. Apparently, Annie had gotten into a quarrel with Rosa Lyons and in anger had threatened Fred's sister by saying, quote, she could light her pipe and before it burned out, go to the place where the ashes of Henry Hargis were. A few days later, she was dead. Now, the story of Henry Hargis is a little complicated. He was the nephew of a woman named Margaret Moore, whose husband had been a volunteer in the Union Army during the Civil War. Margaret had managed to convince the War Department that her husband had been an officer, not simply a soldier, and received a fraudulent pension of several thousand dollars. Before she was arrested and imprisoned for fraud, she gave the money to Henry Hargis, who was then murdered for it by John Lyons and Margaret's son, James Moore. Well, Henry had disappeared from his home in Booger Hole in 1883. He was rumored to have been murdered, but no one was arrested and his body was never found. Well, following the arrest of Fred Moore and Rosa Lyons for the murder of Annie Boggs, a detective named A.W. Sell conducted a search and found clear evidence of a grave under the Moores' cabin. The body had been burned, but bits of bone, hair, and clothing remained. One button even had Henry Hargis's initials on it. Well, John Lyons and James Moore were arrested, but somehow, lost in the shuffle, Fred and Rosa were set free for Annie's murder. A judge decided the confession didn't hold up. To make matters worse, Lyons and Moore were also set free. Even though Moore's sister, Carolyn, testified she'd seen Hargis's body wrapped up in a sheet before it was burned and buried, the judge decided there was not enough evidence to indict the two men for a murder that had happened more than 20 years before. And the killers of Henry Hargis became as free as the man who may or may not have killed Annie Boggs. So was Annie murdered because she was a witch or because she knew too much about a murder that she should have kept her mouth shut about? And did she learn about the murder for the reason Fred Moore believed that she divined it using her conjuring skills? Well, that's going to remain as mysterious as the real identity of Annie's killer. Fred Moore may have pulled the trigger, but to many who lived in Booger Hole, it was a pen shoved through the back of Annie's poppet that truly led to her demise. Magic and murder sometimes went hand in hand in West Virginia in the early 1900s, but it wasn't just there. As we'll see in our next episode, hex magic became a method of murder in Pennsylvania around the same time. You'll hear all about it in 2 weeks, but in the meantime, make sure you don't find any wax dolls lying around wearing any of your old clothes, just in case.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? And I don't mean like spells or incantations to trap spirits, you weirdos. I mean like a new language that could help you start communicating with more people on this plane today. Then I need to tell you about Rosetta Stone. Look, you know the brand, you know the name. They have the expertise and a 30-year legacy, which makes them more qualified than ever to help you learn a new language today. They've helped millions of people build the fluency and confidence to speak new languages. Now, this is the part where Troy would tell me that I made some kind of grammatical error, but he's not here right now, so like, I don't know, it's like speaking tongues. Rosetta Stone focuses on speaking practice for real-life scenarios to get you ready for real conversations with real people. Or maybe you can even learn how to use some different types of Ouija boards. I don't know. Either way, Rosetta Stone can help you learn faster and retain your new language better. Honestly, Rosetta Stone really would have come in handy for season 4 of New Orleans because I know we butchered some of those French names, and I apologize once again. Now, you all know I have a 9-to-5 job when I'm not at the podcast factory, and Rosetta Stone actually helped me not make a total fool out of myself while I was in Brazil interviewing celebrities. Obrigado. And now I want to help you.
So don't put off learning that new language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, American Hauntings podcast listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
Rosetta Stone, how language is learned. Wait, by the way, Troy, like, where do words come from? Hey, no, don't walk away. Oh, Troy, where do words...
Why is it square then?
I just refilled.
No, it is.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Somebody else making square bottles that don't fit in your cup holders now?
So. I know, right? Sorry, that one was in my backpack because it won't fit in the freaking cup holder. All right. Those are our hot takes on water. All right. Thanks for tuning into the American Hauntings podcast, the show where we discuss history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. We are now in season 6 of the podcast. Woods and Fields, Dark and Wicked. Okay, all right.
There you go.
I'm your co-host, and with me is my co-host, author, historian, crime buff, the founder of American Hauntings, and a man with a very deep voice when wants it, Troy Taylor.
Hey.
I think what I need to do is we need to record this right when I wake up, and I haven't, like, really cleared my throat out yet.
Haven't had a good clear.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be just
for that part.
It'd sound absolutely horrible. Anyway, what's going on, man? How's life?
Oh, good, good. Things going pretty well.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been staying busy. I've been having a lot of people on the Winter River Road tours that, you know, a guy came up to me like last night and said, I know this is going to sound weird, but you're the last voice I hear at night and the first voice I hear in the morning.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you're right. That does sound creepy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I got a lot of that last night. We had a bachelorette party as part of the tour.
Oh.
And a bunch of them were like, oh, yeah, we listen to the podcast. It helps us go to sleep. And I'm like, oh,
damn it.
So, yeah. Well, I know, you know, it's
sleep aid.
Apparently it's something soothing, I've been told. So I don't know about that, but I'm glad it works for people.
That reminds me. I was thinking about it on the way here. I was watching a Family Guy episode, and Quagmire's trying to sleep, and he's like, damn it, where's that white noise machine? And he turns it on, and it's just like people screaming and stuff in the background. And he's just like, okay, we're good.
Yeah,
like,
so, which is kind of what this would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, just terrible stories.
Mm-hmm.
I guess our fans are freaks, I guess.
Best way possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of freaks and fans and things going on, what else?
New book came out.
I'm looking at it right now.
In between our last episodes.
Yes.
One Dark Night is out and available now. Mad Gassers, Black Ghosts, America's Sinister Strangers. It is as weird as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But it, honestly, it was probably the most fun I have had writing a book in years.
Really?
I mean, I enjoy writing all of them or I wouldn't do what I do. But
right.
I had so much fun writing this book. And I was... Well, it was that, remember we were at Dead of Winter and somebody said, what's your favorite book? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, whatever it is I'm working on at the time.
Yeah.
And while I am on another project now because, I mean, you know, I can't let the dust settle before the next one. But I look back and think of how much fun that book was. And I think I'm going to feel that way for a long time. But so it's got a different look to it than the other books that I've done. Because it's just a completely different kind of book. And hopefully people will like it. Mm-hmm. I think they will. I've had a lot of people eagerly anticipating its arrival. So that's been nice. So I guess they'll let me know what they think.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I like, yeah, the cover's different. It stands out.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
For sure.
Yeah, it does.
Well, that's awesome.
Thanks.
What do you got as far as events? We're done with Dead of Winter.
I know, Dead of Winter's over. Great. The conference is still coming up. The only... it's a good news and bad news kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a really great year for the conference. The bad news is we're down to like the last 50 tickets.
Oh, man.
I mean, it is really filled up early this year, mm-hmm. which is not a bad thing.
For us.
Right, exactly. But for people who like to procrastinate, it's a bad thing. Uh-huh. So if you're hoping to go, and I know I've been saying this all along, and it always sounds like when the tickets go on sale that I'm just, you know, doing a carnival barker thing on my own deal. But honestly, it's not this year. People are really anxious. I mean, every event we do is filling up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just the conference. I mean, everything we do, we're selling out everything
because get out of their house
people want to get out of the house and do stuff. So it's been, you know, really fun to have these really nice crowds for some of the nicest people we've ever had on a River Road tour last night. But people want to get out and do stuff. Yeah, it's cold, but it's warm on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, it's almost March. It's going to be, by the time people hear this, it will be March. And,
right.
you know, it's not going to be cold for much longer.
We've already had some warm days, too. We have. Warm.
Yeah, and we've got several things in March coming up, like two River Road tours, a dinner on like sinister hauntings, like evil hauntings.
Ooh.
And then, you know, a St. Louis exorcism uncensored dinner. And, you know, everything will fill up before it gets here. It's just that's what's been happening.
Mm-hmm.
So not a bad thing. It's a great thing. And it's been really nice to get to see. I mean, you know, we had people coming last year, but I really feel like that we're, you know, much closer to back to normal than we've been in.
Right.
A couple of years, right? So
Yeah. People are just going for it.
Yeah.
And speaking of people going for it and the events that we had, some of our listener reviews are talking about attending Dead of Winter.
Oh, okay. So
this one is just titled Great, and it's from Ice Sue. It says, just attended the Dead of Winter event, had a great time, enjoyed the live taping of the podcast, and of course seeing you both in person. Our group did the Mineral Springs Night Tour and Investigation. Thoroughly enjoyed seeing all the spooky places you've talked about in past episodes. No, we didn't see any ghosts, but we did smell all the sweet perfume in one of the halls, so we're taking that as a win for our first time as ghost hunters. Looking forward to this season, of course, next year's Dead of Winter. That's awesome. I'm glad they had a good time.
It was a good time, and I don't think we've talked. Well, obviously, we haven't talked about it, but we had so much food. We ended up like four tables full, and it was all on the floor and everything. And I posted the way the van looked when they came to pick everything up. It was filled to the ceiling.
Yeah,
I mean, there was nothing else going to fit in that van. He had it even up in the front seat with him.
That's awesome.
Just to try to get everything back to the food bank.
And it wasn't just all canned goods.
No,
there
was
a lot of good variety
of stuff this year, which was really great. It worked out great. You know, the coffee shop was great. It just was the separate vendor room, all the things we promised. I feel like we did them, and it wasn't incredibly cold this year, so that helped too.
It's the wind that'll get you, as they say in the Midwest and everywhere else. But it was a good time. It was great to meet so many people, take pictures of people, you know, help people download podcast apps, and Troy volunteered me to do that.
Yeah, but see, look at all the interaction you got.
That's true. I'm sure our numbers skyrocketed after Troy just whoring out my services like that, but I was happy to help, and anything to get more people to listen. This last review is titled Great Podcast. It's from Disneyland Donna, I believe. What a great podcast. It's so interesting. I must listen. I love your shows. The live show is great. You guys do such a great job, and I love how your banter is, too. Never stop. Always so happy seeing your podcast come up on my phone. You're not annoying at all. No, I don't believe that, but hang in there. You have a big audience that loves you, and thanks again, Donna. So thank you so much. I had a couple people that who I talked to, and one of them was actually was Jennifer, who we answered her question first, and you kind of called out like, are you in the audience?
Yes.
She and her daughter were there talking to me later about the shirts. She has the Home is Where the Haunt Is shirt, and saying how she loves it. And her daughter, she's like, yeah, my mom didn't really like you at first. She was one of the ones that kind of came around later. She's like, yeah, but now you're great. And I was like, you know what, I'll take it as a win.
Yeah, right.
Anybody
exactly.
I can win over. It was basically a lot of that. People loving Troy, and then people saying, I didn't like you at first. But now that I met you in person.
Oh, there's plenty of people that hate my guts. So we have plenty of those too.
Oh, man. Well, are you ready to dive
into this? Sure, yeah.
So I've titled this part The End of the Witch Hunts. So you said the witch hunts just sort of stopped, meaning the trials ended, but that doesn't mean there was the end of like like suspicions and witchcraft being practiced. You're going to talk about later, but it's all about perception, as you'd say.
Yeah.
And I think something is we've kind of seen before, when people get preoccupied with things like wars or famines or other things, they stop kind of pursuing other dumb things.
Yeah, the trivial stuff just seems to fall by the wayside.
Sure,
You know.
Yes, yes. And then the beliefs in witchcraft, you mentioned that they persisted, but people didn't necessarily link magic with the devil. And that's something I wanted to talk about, because beforehand it seemed like we were exclusively talking about witchcraft, and that was very much associated. You're talking about things that are different types of folk magic healing practices and stuff. Would this be something like, thinking back to like tribal shaman kind of thing, like starting way
all,
back there?
Yeah, I think it would all fall in that same kind of category. But, you know, the thing with, you know, the witches had been around forever, but normally they were what we were focused on in this episode.
Yeah.
All the stuff with the devil and stuff, that came out of the Spanish Inquisition and the Puritan witch hunts in England. All that stuff is really what led to, you know, the witch trials in the United States. They just brought all that stuff with them. And when they got here, they just continued the traditions they already had of, you know, you must be signing the devil's, you know, book and, you know, that kind of stuff. The traditional, what you think of as old witchcraft stories, I guess, you know, the old crone around the, you know, around the pot, you know, the out of Macbeth or Hamlet or whatever that was. Macbeth, I guess. But that's kind of the standard that people had for witches. But that's not what witches really were. And really using the term witch is something that most people, I mean, it's now been sort of embraced in modern society now since the 1950s and 60s.
Yeah.
Since the revival of the old ways kind of thing that started and became Wicca. You know, they'll call themselves witches, but back at the time period we're talking about here in this episode, it's, you know, it's cunning men, wise women, the cunning folk.
I like
you
that,
know
those terms.
And they are, you know, they are some of the men call themselves witch doctors or power doctors and things. And really it was more about healing. It's more about healing. It was about herbs and things. And yes, they would sell you a love potion to give to whoever you're in love with or some kind of but see, I guess that, you know, it gets into that whole thing of, if you believe it's going to work, it's the power of positive thinking.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
you can make things happen if you think about them hard enough. I mean, that's not witchcraft. That's not anything.
Books about that now.
Yeah,
they're still
exactly.
famous.
Now that's self-help. But at the time, that wasn't a normal thing. And so when you, but now they had something tangible to hold on to, a potion or an herb or an amulet or a token of some kind. And, you know, by using that and putting their belief system behind it, you know, their good fortune, they would manifest, as they say now, you know, positive things.
Right.
So
right.
That's really what that boiled down to. And again, they were doing doctoring, midwives, that kind of thing, back when, you know, there weren't really any good doctors. I mean, there was just no medical science.
Right.
You know, that was a long way from being discovered. And so, you know, they had potions that would help your headache and things. And they're not magic potions. They're just presented that way.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess you could sell them for an extra nickel, you know,
sure.
if it was magic.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, cocaine for a toothache
kind of thing. Yeah, when you use this potion, say this spell and your headache will go away. Okay, really? And they're just giving you something that cures your headache.
Exactly, yeah. And you're talking about how one of the main functions was that of a healer, but you also talked about like fortune tellers helping lift curses.
Sure.
And using things like crystals and wands, books, tarot cards. So basically tons of people in this building right
well,
now
right, exactly,
where we are.
Exactly,
in
at the Mineral Springs. But, you know, and again, it falls into that same thing. If you come to a, you know, a power doctor or a conjurer and you say, listen, I've got this witch has put a spell on me and I, you know, I feel terrible all the time. I'm really sick and I know it's because someone has bewitched me. Okay, well, here, use this and this will lift the curse. Well, of course it will, because you believe that it will.
Right.
So, and again, it's the same kind of thing, that sympathetic magic, you know, if manifesting things to happen. I mean, it's a legitimate thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to call it a science because it's a, you know, it's a belief in it.
Right.
And that's what makes it work. But it does work.
Yeah. So you get to the same end result. You just kind of, maybe science takes one route and then another takes another.
Exactly.
Yeah. And something you also mentioned about these people is often, that I thought was just really fascinating, was creating their own books, and especially like the family Bible thing. But I actually, this morning before I came here, I got up and I went to the store and I bought like a new notebook, because I've always filled up a ton of notebooks. Mm-hmm. But something I'd never really thought of was like, why not like put pictures in there or other newspaper clippings or draw more in them or things like that, but make them more like living,
become a
breathing
scrapbooker.
I should. Why not? My mom knits and stuff. I can do scrapbooking. I thought that was really cool, because I've seen, even my father had one of these, and I've seen in other people's houses, like Bibles filled with a bunch of stuff.
Sure.
And so is that where that notion of like who gets the family Bible thing kind of came from?
Yeah. And it's, you know, and so a lot of these, you know, practitioners would, you know, who did, as I said, had a lot of books at a time when books weren't that common, especially in areas where a lot of this was popular. We're talking about the Appalachians and, you know, rural areas.
Yeah.
But they needed these books because they had information, and books were power. And a family Bible put you in touch with your ancestors, which is a big part of root magic and conjuring and folk magic. And it's like I said, it's locks of hair, it's pictures, it's newspaper clippings about the family, obituaries. You know, a lot of the, have you ever seen any of those great big old Bibles that have like an entire section in them for your family tree and to keep track of all the weddings and all the funerals? And that was a really, I don't think it's as common as it used to be. I'm sure it is in some areas, but that used to be something that everybody did.
Yeah.
I can remember cleaning out like an elderly aunt's house who had died, and we were getting all the stuff out of it. And I mean, not only was she kind of a loon, because she'd hid like silver dollars everywhere and we'd find them in books, and I mean, just crazy stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
She also had a lot of really neat old stuff that she'd saved. But she had one of these gigantic family Bibles that had been passed along from her parents to, you know, from parents to parents to parents, and people keep track of all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
I mean,
it's a
sense.
Really cool time capsule of a family.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't mean a whole lot to other people, but when they're your own family and your own ancestors, you know, and you're a practitioner of folk magic, that's something pretty cool to have.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it'd be a very powerful artifact or something. All right, let's talk about this place. You've already said that unless you're in sixth grade, it's not funny to say. It's still kind of funny.
It is still kind of funny.
It's still kind of gross.
I needed to get that out there, that booger was not
what
we think of as boogers.
So, right. And well, I think just combining it with hole also just.
Yeah, it's not. I know. Hole. It didn't help.
It does,
I know.
It doesn't help. But you know what? It was a different time and it is what it is. And here we are.
And I don't think they called what you pick out of your nose a booger back then.
Who knows?
I mean, obviously they were using booger to explain ghostly things, especially down in this area.
West
Virginia. But.
Which was also, it was a term I had not heard for that before.
Oh, really?
And then, you know, when
like
I saw...
Like boogeyman.
Well, same right. And so that made sense. But when I saw it initially pop up on the outline you gave me, I was like, okay. Like, we're gonna have to address this. I know it.
That's why I wrote
like
it into the thing. I couldn't not write it into the monologue.
Yeah, so. And I was reading the monologue too, and it was talking about like, unless you're in sixth grade, and I was like, does he know that I have already been laughing?
Well, I was already laughing about it too. Okay, so you know.
So 1900, a remote settlement in West Virginia. You already mentioned what the term means. The place is known for a ghostly woman who wandered the woods and fields, dressed in white with dark hair. Have I told you that? If I ever write a memoir, I'm gonna have different chapters, of course. They'll all be hilarious. But the one about relationships, I think, is going to be titled Medusa, Mermaids, and Other Women I'd Let Kill Me. And this sounds kind of like one of those people that would fall into that category. It had a reputation as a rough, lawless place. And, you know, what do you do when there's trouble in a place like this? You take matters into your own hands.
Sure.
One way to fight off witches and things like that, you said, is to make a beeswax image or poppet of the suspected witch and burn it or drive nails into it. It's like a voodoo doll.
Sure, it is a lot like a voodoo doll. It's the same idea behind it, you know, that you can, you know, it's a talisman magic.
If
you have a piece of somebody, their hair or some of their clothing or something, and you attach it to your doll or dress it, you know, use the hair. And there's, when you get into like voodoo stuff, there's a lot more things they ask for. And normally I think this is all kind of like, I don't know. It's the same kind of magic we've been talking about. To me, it seems like that in order for something like this to work, the person would need to know that you had the doll.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, in all honesty, if someone told you that they had your hair and they'd made a voodoo doll of you,
it's creepy.
I think it would creep me out.
It's crossed the line.
You know? I know. And then if they're like, I'm stabbing it right now. Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, what is that?
Is that what that pain
in my back is? You know, so
it makes me think of the show on Nickelodeon, Hey Arnold, a lot more differently, because Helga G. Pataki had that shrine of Arnold from like old gum and stuff that he chewed in his hair. Oh man, now I can't even look back on that. It's horrible.
Really disturbing now, huh?
Yeah, I don't like it. And okay, so like you said, one way to kind of fight them off is to have those things. And this is what someone did to one Annie Boggs. And the Boggs were a large family that had been in town for generations who, from my understanding, what you said is they kind of like worked with other families. The community, like within
they were a little bit, well, they were a little bit more, they had a little more money than the rest of them did. You know, he had worked as kind of like a justice of the peace, the patriarch of the family. But there were other families that had been living in that area that I listed there for several generations. But most of them were farmers or, you know, worked with timber and things. But they had tried to be respectable. You know, the Squire Boggs had built a schoolhouse that no one wanted to use, you know, because it just in 1900 in rural, very rural, mountainous West Virginia, it seemed unnecessary to have an education for boys or girls.
Farm and eat or learn how to read this book?
Exactly. Like, or learn how to read this book.
Yeah.
And so a schoolhouse was just seen as non-essential, which is why she moved into it when she came back. And we don't know why she came back to the area. We don't even know. I couldn't find any information about where she had been or anything, but she came back with granddaughters.
Yes.
And, you know, in very difference in age, an 18-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Yeah, and immediately starts kind of pissing people off.
Yeah.
She's a healer, a conjurer with a sharp tongue, and was hard to get along with.
Which, as we know, is the all signs that you must be a witch if you piss people off. That was our entire witch hunt thing was going. And so you're looking at me going, okay, so when is there like magic? Well, there isn't any because they just made people mad. So they accused them of being witches because they could get rid of them and get their property. That's pretty much what happened.
I wanted to see someone turn somebody into a newt.
I know. It's just not happening.
Not happening. But, you know, it did happen. Local misfortunes, things like that get blamed on Annie. Marshall Cottrell accused her of riding him at night like a horse.
I know.
And when I read this, my first...
I know, you snickered.
Well, I was just like, most guys would love some cowgirl at night.
No, it is not like that.
Not like that. So the guy's just worn out from just running up and down those hills and bogs and everything. They talk about lynching her, but decide to try another conjurer and a poppet first. Let's be reasonable here.
Let's see if we can get rid of her, fight fire with fire.
Like you said, cooler heads prevailed, and which, I mean... I'm glad for a little bit.
Yeah, they didn't lynch her.
Yeah, they didn't lynch her.
Shot her instead.
They shot her instead in the schoolhouse through the window. Murder investigation started by Deputy U.S. Marshal Daniel Cunningham, who you kind of alluded to. Is he like a badass kind of guy?
He was, and I actually found quite a bit of history about him that I didn't. It was not in any way related to this story, so I didn't include all of it. But, yeah, he had brought in a lot of pretty bad guys, you know, around the area. So he was pretty well known, but it sidetracked the whole story. So I'm
surprised and proud of you because I know how much you love to talk about a badass lawman.
I do.
So he ends up eventually arresting Marshall Cottrell and his nephew. They wouldn't fess up to the murder, but they definitely went all in on Annie being a witch.
About Annie, yeah.
But
yeah.
You said people in the courtroom, you know, there were different kind of rules and regulations stuff back then, but people couldn't seem to agree on the rules of a witch horse riding regarding lightning things.
Right?
And I love people arguing about, somebody's got to be sitting there in the background.
I like how people are just, fuck? I mean, I'm reading through this and it's in newspaper stuff and I'm reading it. And I just love how the people are just shouting things out in the courtroom. And I'm thinking,
order?
Well, of course, they did have to make everyone leave all their guns outside.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess that was something. But then they've got to, why did no one object to women shouting things about witches in the courtroom?
Right.
To me, that seemed like a little bit of a prejudicial information for a case.
Yeah.
I mean, it really just made them look guilty.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
So.
Sure. And you said it appeared that the hostility Cottrell expressed toward Annie was enough of a motive to at least indict him, but the case is eventually dropped. No one's ever convicted of her murder. But the story's not over yet. This is the part where I said the plot thickens, but nothing really happens.
No, not really. I know.
February 1905, a neighbor, John Lyons, confessed to the murder of Annie Boggs, stating that she was going to reveal knowledge of another murder. She appeared to have knowledge about the death of one Henry Hargis.
Yeah. So Turns out it had nothing to do with witchcraft.
Yeah, so this took me a second, but so let me see if I get this right. Henry's the nephew of Margaret Moore, whose husband was in the Union Army. She had convinced the War Department that he was an officer so she could get more of his pension money. She eventually gets caught up. She decides to give the money to Henry, who's killed by John Lyons and Margaret's son, James Moore.
Who didn't get the money.
Okay,
yeah, right, She didn't give it to her son. She gave it to her nephew instead. Okay. And so that caused a lot of hard feelings.
Got it.
So he got his buddy, John Lyons, to go and help him kill this guy. Well, Annie mentions to his wife, to John's wife, or I'm sorry, yeah, John Lyons' wife, that she could go walk over and get that body anytime she wanted to in the time that it would take her her pipe to go out.
Yeah.
So she knew where they buried the body, and that's why she was murdered.
Got it. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, it all comes together then. And eventually everyone ends up going free for all the murders.
Yeah, no kidding. No one goes to jail at all.
So. Why do you think they came forward and confessed to this? Did you find
he confessed to it. But then they decided that the confession wasn't valid.
Right, right.
And then they even had somebody who testified that she had seen Hargis's body, and before they burned it and buried it, and they didn't go to trial on that either because it was just hearsay. They decided.
But do you know why he finally decided to fess up?
I have no idea.
There was nothing about
that. No idea.
I didn't know if the guilt got to him for 20 years.
I guess maybe, or maybe it was witchcraft.
Maybe it was witchcraft. So kind of simplest. Do you think the Occam's razor here thing about who killed Annie, why, and how?
I don't really think it was because she was a witch. I mean, I think Marshall Cottrell was an illiterate hillbilly who really. I don't know. I'm going to guess there's more to that story.
Yeah, there's gotta
I honestly don't think he really believed that she had ridden him like a horse through the hills. I think he was trying to make a point that
sounds
he believed she was a witch, and that was something that witches were known to do to people. I mean, that's my only guess. Why, I don't know, other than he probably had some sort of disagreement with her over property or money or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, you accuse people of being a witch. I mean, that was the way it worked.
Standard procedure.
And so the more his confessions about, you know, being ridden like a horse is no different than the people making confessions at Salem.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the episode before, you know. So
sure.
I think that, you know, he was jumping on the hysteria that was going on, and it sounded good at the time.
Right.
Because he, you know, swore he didn't kill her, you know, but did he? No, probably not. I'm sure the other guy did and killed her because she knew too much.
Okay, that's fair enough. I was trying to think, like, my last question for this is...
And believe it or not, I have... streamline this so it's not so complicated.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Okay, that's good.
Because it was getting to be a really complicated story, and so I'm kind of going through it going, okay, how do I cut through all this crap?
Yeah.
And lay out this story so that it tells the story but makes sense. Well, so this is a little work with this one.
No, I appreciate it because I eventually...
It was really getting deep with all the names. And
wait
a minute, who was this guy?
When you got to Henry Hargis and stuff, I finally, I pulled out a notebook, but then I was like, wait, looking at the outline, I was like, there's not that much more left here. So I'm glad that you did that because I was starting to get a little...
I really had to.
A little confused,
too. Very complicated.
Too. Yeah, after a freaking Velisca and the lips
I know,
and everything.
Right? We didn't need another one of those.
The last question I have is, I don't want to say this is a fun story, but is this just a fun story? Or was there anything you took away from this? Or, like, what do we learn from this? Like,
well,
don't be a smartass if people can kill you?
I guess. I looked at it as this was sort of a... I mean, it's 1900. But it's one of the last stories like this that I could track down of someone who was persecuted the way that she was because they believed she was a witch.
Mm.
And this was not that different from the era of the witch trials. It just happened to be you know, 150 years later kind
yeah.
of thing, you know? Okay. So it was really sort of the end. It was a story I found that was kind of cool way to close out this section of the uh-huh. podcast, because we do have some more things about magic and witchcraft, but as far as your traditional witches, this was kind of the end.
Got it.
For me, at least, it's, you know, stuff I found.
Okay. So. Okay. No, fair enough. Yeah. I was trying to figure out, I was like, what is he trying to teach me with this? But now I get it. That makes sense.
Well, and then the way I ended it too, if you find any wax dolls laying around with your old clothes, worry.
Yes. Know. Oh my God. That's going to be a great prank I can play on you sometime in the future. Maybe I'll wait another season till maybe you forget about this one, and then I'll just have one set up, or I'll start working on it now. Oh, I could auction it off at the conference or something. Oh, okay. So many ideas. I'll stop spitballing in real time. But I'd like to give a couple shout outs to our latest Patreon subscribers, as we talk about all the time. It helps the show sound better, helps keep us going and keep us doing what we're doing. So thank you for supporting the show to Megan, Jack, Julie, Valerie, Andy, Kelly, Nathan, and Discworld God, who you better be good if that's what you're saying. But thank you so much for supporting the show. You can find that at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. And it is now time for our Ghostwriter segment. If you have a question or comment about the world of the macabre, you can email us at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on socials and all that stuff. But I do want to say, I've turned off my Twitter notifications, and I don't mean to ignore people. It's
just, I've noticed that.
It's such a, I hate that app so much when I get on there. But I am going to go through and start responding, because I clicked today and it said like 20 plus, and I was like, oh damn it.
Yeah, I'll see you respond to something that I like tagged you in like 2 weeks ago.
I know.
Like, dude, really on the ball.
Here. I hate that app. So I'm on Instagram 100 times a day, but Twitter, I'm always it's such a it can be a bad place if you don't curate it correctly.
Yes, it is a world of chaos.
Yes,
it
especially is. Now.
Yeah, it is.
But anyway, but yeah, so you know what? Just email me, AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com. This email comes to us from Kayla. The subject is obsessed. She says, I've never been so obsessed with the podcast. Oh boy. I've probably listened to every episode at least 3 times. Okay, someone check on Kayla. My favorites are the horror movie reviews. They're so much fun. I have a running list of my phone on my phone of movies to watch recommended by the two of you. So thank you. I listen while I work out, when I'm in the car, while I cook, pretty much always. I'm a mother of two, so when I'm listening, the kids know mom is having her time. Haha. Love the latest episode on the Salem Witch Trials. Agree with Troy. Salem is a wonderful place to visit, and they do things very respectfully while still being a tourist hub. I could go on forever, but thank you for what you do. See you at Dinner and Spirits event soon. 7-hour drive. Making a road trip out with my best friend. Can't wait.
Cool.
Damn.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, thanks, Kayla. Yeah, that's all super nice. And I have podcasts like that too, where I put on like just headphones and I just kind of go like while I'm cooking, and it's just like I have friends.
Yeah, I know it. I turn it on all the time. If I'm getting up and I'm going, you know, getting ready to turn down the bed, brush my teeth and stuff, mm-hmm. and I've been watching TV, I'll turn a podcast on.
Yeah.
Listen to it for 10 minutes and turn it off again.
So. I was doing the same thing. Like, so yesterday was Friday, and so I went out and partied. No, I didn't. I stayed home and did like four loads of laundry.
Yeah.
And I noticed that I had a little portable speaker at one point while I was like taking a shower, and then later I had my AirPods in, mm-hmm. and then when I'd go to the laundry place, and then later I had just on my phone, and then I was like cooking, and then I'd go to Netflix and come back, and I was like, damn, I'm just kind of bouncing all over same couple podcasts.
Right.
They weren't even new. They were ones I'd heard before too.
Yeah.
And it just comfort. Like
it is.
Yeah. A comforting
thing. I guess it's the same reason that people use stuff that they like to go to sleep. You know, I guess it's the same thing.
We should look into getting on like that Calm app or something, or one of those things where like
just read stories about people being murdered.
Yeah. Where like, it's like, there's like Matthew McConaughey ghosts. And them are on there, but it could be Troy reading like One Dark Night, you know, or something like that. Oh, well, that's all I got, man. That's kind of wraps up some of the more standard witchy stuff.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for listening, guys. We hope as always, we ask you to share this with your friends. Leave us a review on iTunes. It always helps people see the show. I did want to mention too that I didn't mention earlier when I was talking about all of our different events, that if you go to dinnerandspirits.com, mm-hmm. you can find all those events. And again, I also want to remind everybody that when you buy books from us, from AmericanHauntings.net, use the podcast discount code. So you get 10% off. All you got to do is in the promo code section, put in the word podcast. You'll automatically get 10% just for being a listener. So it's like we're paying you to listen.
You're making money.
It's a free podcast. You're making money by doing it.
It's like good business decision.
Exactly. So anyway, guys, thanks a lot. And we will see you in 2 weeks with an episode that I'm really excited about. So it's a good one.
You weren't excited about this one?
No, I was. Love this one. I loved this episode. I've really dug these episodes in this season.
Awesome. All right. Well, this episode of the American Hauntings podcast was written by Troy Taylor and it was produced and edited by me, Cody Beck. Music for this season performed by Packy Lundholm.
You didn't want me doing it, that's for sure.
And you don't want me writing it.
Yeah.
And you can find more about his music, that's Packy Lundholm's music, at upcoming shows on Twitter, Instagram, Bandcamp, SoundCloud, and Facebook. And you can find us in most of those places too. Plus, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. You can also rate us now on Spotify.
Oh, can
that's
you?
A thing.
Oh, and is it?
Yeah.
What happened to everybody was going to quit Spotify? No one did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that passed.
I guess that's over. Yeah. You can see the website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com for more info about the show, notes, photos, links.
Is that up to date?
And more.
Keeping that up to date?
Yeah.
Just checking?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Check your Twitter stuff.
I know. You gotta.
Just checking.
Also, after Dead of Winter, somebody told me that the only way that they get the show is to download it straight from the website and then put it on. He said put it on flash drives and shared it with other people. And I was like, okay, now I have to make sure I keep like this. If this is how he's listening, I gotta do it.
Good point.
I'll be more on top of that, and I will dive back into Twitter. It's just overwhelming.
Oh no, it's okay. I mean, I'm not. You know, I just think it's funny.
It is.
I'll go, oh, Cody liked this post. I'm like, what the hell? I mean, it was like 2 weeks ago, man.
I know. I need to just get on my laptop and do it too, because I think on my phone it's just like
It's overwhelming. It is kind of convenient to do stuff on your actual computer, but on the other hand, it's something I can do when I'm just watching trash TV.
I know.
You know, and I got, you know, Chicago Fire on. You don't have to pay attention to that. It's the same show every week.
Yeah, you get it.
Literally a soap opera with firemen, but I can be scrolling through.
Right,
you know,
right.
Stuff,
no,
you know?
I get
so
it.
So it's kind of handy for that.
I get it.
I'm entertained by the vitriol that is taking
the chaos,
place
yeah.
on Twitter. So.
Oh, well, thanks for listening. Thanks for tweeting, whatever.
Yeah. Sorry.
We
I guess we weren't done, were we?
We're not quite. We couldn't and probably wouldn't, definitely wouldn't do it without you. So until next time, goodbye.
So long, guys.
See you later.
Bye.
All right.
That was fun.
Yeah, that'll be
very long.
35 minutes, I think.
That's perfect.
Once we clean this up,
it'll be about an hour. Sure, but not even an hour.
Right.